It's the business.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
Hello, and you are very welcome into another edition of The Hot Desk. It is Aideen Fallon standing in for Mary O'Neill this evening. Later on the show, I'm going to be chatting to Fergal Kelly, Solutions Engineer with Compar Vision Systems and Robotics, based in Clayboy Business Park in Waterford. He'll talk about the company's recent expansion and also the rising concern that many people have that robotics are taking over manual jobs traditionally done by humans. I'll also have Trevor Darmody and Mary Merritt from Wintervale in studio to discuss the positive impact that the popular Christmas festival is expected to have on Waterford City and County. But we will start the show by taking a look back at last weekend's hugely successful business awards, when our news team David Farrell and Kieran Foley spoke to some of the winners.
Dave Barry here from Dave Barry Plastics. We both won the Business of the Year award for under 100 employees and the overall Business of the Year award also.
Dave, first question for you. You've won two awards here tonight. How does it feel?
Absolutely amazing. We're just blown away. Like, we really weren't expecting either of the two. So we're so happy, you know, that we got both of them. It's amazing.
And you were mentioning to me there a few minutes ago, you started off yourself.
Yes. Started off in a very, very small, just by myself, started to grow it. And then I got with Dean Donnelly and Ian Fahey, and these guys came on board. And we grew this business into what it is now, as a multinational. We serve pharmaceutical companies worldwide.
And you mentioned the teamwork there. How important is teamwork in building a company from the ground up?
It's impossible to do without teamwork. It has to be teamwork. You have to have a good, as I say, like, these guys have been with me. They have my back all the time. And again, this is why I wouldn't be here today. I couldn't be talking to you today without the guys and support from both my wife and Dean, Ian, Isaac, and all the Dave Barry team, which are amazing guys. And again, they've all got my back, and we build it up to where it is today.
And you're a small company in Dungarvan, serving Fortune 500 companies. That must be surreal.
Well, we're a small company in Dungarvan, but we got recently acquired by a Fortune 500 company as well, in Ingersoll Rand. And we make products for them that we're serving the life science companies throughout the world, US, Poland, Iceland. We've got, you know, so again, and with a lot of new opportunity coming to us as well with this company that's acquired us there in August.
Hi, I'm Sarah Doherty, Head of HR at Ergen Pharma, and we're thrilled to win Best Business of the Year, 100 plus employees.
And great celebrations here amongst your colleagues, Sarah. What do you feel it is that gave Ergen the extra push across the line in this category?
As you said, we're joined by colleagues here tonight, and I really think it's the people that make Ergen what it is. We've just celebrated our 20-year anniversary. We have a huge investment in Waterford, opening a new site. So really it is, we are homegrown, our people, our products, the patient care that we have, our innovation also sets us apart from other companies here tonight.
And that sense of camaraderie is key in any business, but it's clear to see you certainly have it here at Ergen, and that Ergen is really part of the success story of pharma in Waterford also.
Absolutely. As I mentioned, we were founded 20 years ago by two very entrepreneurial men, Tom and Patsy. We were taken over by Opco 10 years ago. We're continuing to innovate. We have a huge investment in our R&D centre here in Waterford, and we'll continue to invest in that as we grow.
Well, congratulations once again, Sarah, to yourself and all of your colleagues at Ergen Pharma.
Thank you so much.
Regina Mangan, Managing Director of Liberty Blue Estate Agents, thrilled to have won the Best Business Under 20 Employees. Thank you.
Not at all. Congratulations, Regina. How does it feel for a small team like yourselves to take away an award like this today?
We're absolutely ecstatic. There is no better place to win than our own place, i.e. Waterford, Ireland's best place to live.
What do you think has been your key to success over the past few years?
Well, one, the number one thing for me is about having great people on the team. That's the team working with me, but also the people that advise us, our consultants, our mentors, the people that help us be the best we can be. Also, continuous improvement. I am obsessed about that. And that obsession with continuous improvement and trying to be better than we were last year and the year before has really served us super well.
Going forward then, what do you hope to achieve in the next year?
be better than we were this year, next year. Like, with so much things happening, like AI and, you know, automation and everything, it's about learning what we can do to be better, to serve our clients, and working smarter. And excited about all the amazing things that are happening in Waterford, like the North Keys development and all the amazing opportunities. And again, I go back to the fact that we live in Ireland's best place to live.
Michael Skeen from the Granville Hotel of Waterford, and it was the Environmental Sustainability Award.
And a highly contested award, as all of the awards were here tonight. What does it mean to yourself and all at the Granville to get such recognition?
We're delighted. We've been on a sort of an environmental journey for a number of years. We're not fully there yet, but we're all working on it. We have members of our team here tonight that are involved in our green team, and it's made up of about 12 to 14 team members across the hotel, doing lots of various things, you know, from reducing our plastics to all sorts of environmental little things, to getting our greenhouse up and running. Lots of various things that the team are all involved. So I'm delighted for them tonight. It's well deserved.
And for a hotel to take such measures, what would you say to other hotels maybe about embarking on a green journey that you have?
I mean, these things can sometimes seem daunting at the start, but like, it's all about small steps. So that's what we've done. You know, it's you can't just magic wave a wand and it happens overnight. It takes a number of years. But, you know, it's all about small steps, doing little things, getting the team involved, creating a culture that everybody wants to be involved. And that's the key to it.
It's Christine Ramsey, Head of Client Operations. We won the Customer Service Excellence Award and with ClearCom. Yeah.
And this award is about customer excellence. What's your secret to keeping your customers happy?
Wow. Our secret, I can't tell you my secret, but we have a very engaging team that keep in touch with our clients on a regular basis and help them achieve all their goals and everything they need to. So,
what's your plans for the future? Any future growth plans?
Yeah, bigger and better. Always working, always constantly onboarding new clients, so getting bigger and bigger. So, please God, on we go.
I'm joined now by Will Lee from Fitzgerald's Menswear. Big smile on his face after winning Retailer of the Year. Will, you're here with some of the team here tonight. What does it mean to yourselves to get such recognition?
Look, it's a great honour for us. We're in business nearly 70 years. It's a privilege, you know. It's hard work in the background, but to be alongside the other nominees, it's a great privilege for us. I think, I know it's a cliche, I think everyone's a winner when you're nominated. And on the night, we took it away in this case, but we're delighted. Look, our team work hard, and it's great to be acknowledged amongst the business community, you know, that our passion and dedication to customer service is an acknowledgement tonight. So yeah, delighted.
And customer service and building a rapport with repeat customers, that's something which you all take great pride in.
Yeah, look, to be fair to Tony, who built the business over the years, it's been his ethos, and you know, we try emulate that every day. But like everything, whether you're like Harlow's Jewelers, who are 4 years in business, or whether you're George Corbett, the other nominees, they're 30 years in business, you work every day to make it work, and you work hard at it. So yeah, it's the passion that maybe Tony has instilled in us, and hopefully we still present that, and I'm hoping that's why customers still come back to us. So customer service is key.
And you're in the heart of the city centre. You've seen many different changes, but this again is a great boost in to city centre retail.
Isn't it fabulous? I mean, Waterford City genuinely is vibrant, and you know, Ireland's oldest city. It's fantastic to be part of that fabric. For the length that we have, we're privileged to be doing it. But again, yeah, it's great to be part of that community, and we're privileged to be alongside all these businesses as well, and being from Waterford as well. And of course, we have the business in Dungarvan as well. So, you know, West Waterford is taken up there as well.
It's the business.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
I'm here in the Clayboy Business Park in the offices of Compar.ie, and I'm with Fergal Kelly. Fergal, first of all, tell us, what is your title here with Compar?
Yeah, so I'm an automation solution specialist with Compar, Vision Systems and Robotics Ireland. So we are the Irish arm of a Swiss headquartered machine vision and robotics company who've been going to celebrate 40 years actually next year. and 10 years in Ireland next year.
Okay, so rewind. You said the word robotics, and I know people are sitting up in their chairs now going, ooh, robotics, right. So we have robots here in the building with us.
We do.
Tell us what it is exactly that the company does.
So I suppose we take really any process that can be manual, usually in some sort of manufacturing facility, typical, you know, pharmaceutical, medical devices, which were very strong here in Waterford in the southeast. I suppose what we do really is we take processes that would otherwise be fully manual, such as the inspection, quality inspection of a tablet or of a piece of equipment. And we use very high fidelity cameras to inspect that in the same way that a human eye would have. But we use a computer to process the information instead of our brains. And we use the images that we take, we analyze them, and we inspect for all sorts of things like cosmetic defects or the presence of text or the correct barcode or expiry date on a tablet or a package. Essentially, anything that could be looked at by a human, we can look at it using technology instead. And we often integrate that with robotics in order to move the parts underneath the camera or to move them from one place to another as part of a manufacturing line or something like that.
You have mentioned the word inspection there a few times. So is that mainly what your robots are going to be doing? They're inspecting as opposed to manufacturing.
So typically the lines are producing something, yeah. So there will be a full production line, like in the, you know, the local companies that produce lenses or syringes, as the case may be. Those lines do the assembly typically of components or the manufacturing of them. Where we come in is more, as I say, in the inspection of them. So our robots can do things that don't involve inspection at all. They can just move apart from one place to another, for example. But that would already usually be on the line that's being built. Where we add our speciality is the ability to move and inspect. So yeah, really, when we talk about inspection, it's typically the automation of a manual process. So we can pick something up that maybe needs to be inspected in 3D. And so we can rotate that using a robot that holds it and spin it around in front of the camera in a very specific way. We fully control the speed, the angle, the rate at which the camera takes the pictures. So we have an extremely repeatable process, which is where technology, I suppose, maybe brings that's the USP, I suppose, that we bring, is the repeatability of our process, so that you can be sure that you're kind of inspecting in the same way again and again and again over a really high speed manufacturing line, so that when you produce thousands of tablets, they've all been consistently inspected. You remove a bit of variability that can often happen with human driven processes.
Okay, you mentioned it as a Swiss company mm-hmm. and it's been in operation for 40 years. To go back 40 years ago, we were living in a completely different world, you know, it was pre-AI and all of that. So what did the company start off as?
Yeah, so the company started off, there was still robotics and there still was inspection, just not nearly as advanced as you'd imagine here. So we are the oldest partner of Epson Robotics, the Japanese robotics company, probably more well known in our lives as the printer company. But we are an integrator of other people's hardware. We take hardware from the industry that's out there with things like cameras, lighting, robotics, and we build solutions using them for customers. And so that didn't really change. It's just the level of advancement in the technology has maybe changed, but the concept remains the same. It was always some form of inspection process or quality or movement of a product. How we do that is just more advanced, I suppose. We built our own vision software that runs on, it's a PC-based piece of software that does the inspection analysis, I suppose. So we take the images, but then they have to be analysed. So we can teach the software, I suppose, what to look for in our own proprietary software. And that's technically our only IP, is that it's called Vision Expert.
And the Irish company, the Irish arm of it, which mm-hmm. is here in Waterford, as you said, has been in existence for 10 years. You've expanded recently, just in the last 6 months, which is why we're featuring you. Can you tell us what it is that the Irish arm does? Or is most of the manufacturing done in Switzerland? What does the Irish branch do?
Yep. So we work really, really closely. We are separate, but we are very much part of the overall company. We liaise constantly with our Swiss colleagues. So we are really a team of engineers. We have about 50 employees in total, and I think only four are not engineers. So that's across vision engineers, mechanical engineers, applications engineers, robotics engineers. So I suppose we are all involved in the solutions that we're providing. So in Ireland, we primarily focus on sales and support. So we do a lot of project work where we...
For Europe.
Yes, for Europe, but primarily for Ireland. So like we've got a huge amount of customers in our target industries in Waterford, Limerick, Cork, kind of the Shannon region and Galway. There's the hotbeds and Dublin, obviously, but Dublin, they're funny. They kind of... they are almost insular in that they have so many businesses and so many companies who can solve their problems. They stick almost kind of in their own region, whereas we service then a lot of the rest of the country, I suppose. But yeah, really what it comes down to is that we, if there's a full machine to be built, it's typically built in Switzerland, and we'll validate and we'll import it and stuff like that. But there's lots of things that we can do here locally, such as just inspection jobs. We can write, do the engineering work on behalf of companies who can't do it themselves or don't want to do it themselves. We can provide cameras, we can provide physical hardware, we can do repair work, servicing, maintenance, training, all that sort of thing. So we're really a multifaceted business in that we can do as much or as little as customers want. Essentially, we're just trying to be as helpful as possible in whatever way we can help our customers. So in Ireland, that focuses mainly on the areas that are not requiring the full manufacture of a production line or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so look, I said this to you off air, that I would ask you this question, because there obviously is a lot of concern amongst people about the rise of, you know, robotics and now with AI replacing jobs that humans would have done traditionally. What is your feeling on that? And do you think it is something that we should be frightened of?
Frightened of? Absolutely not. Conscious of 100%. It's a really, really complex question. It's easy to be consumed by buzzwords, right? So AI is used now in everything that you purchase now has some AI component. You'll see it on advertisements for telly. So you'll have AI upscaling. You in your phone, Samsung, Apple, it's a huge race to win the AI technology war. But exactly what that means is not clear to a lot of the, you know, just your everyday person who's not working in the area. What exactly does that mean? We're not in any way, shape or form in the world of true AI yet. We are very much still just using machines to process things really quickly and learn patterns in a more advanced way. That's what AI actually means right now. We all know ChatGPT and Gemini. Those are language models. They essentially just have consumed massive amounts of data. They don't think for themselves, or they don't know anything that we haven't taught them. So it's important that we understand the limitations of AI as it currently is and accept that it will continue to develop. True AI, Alan Turing, if you know the AI, the father of AI, I suppose, came up with the test for true AI. If we get to the point in the future, which we may do, but it's hard to look that far ahead, where we have real intelligence that can actually think for itself, then we have a much bigger problem. Right now, AI is essentially
It can learn and adapt.
It can learn. It absolutely does learn and it does adapt. But it only adapts insofar as we provide it the information. It doesn't think for itself. It only thinks within the parameters that we set it. And it can't go beyond that. We physically don't have the technology for it. It would require a massive breakthrough to reach that level. In our world, robotics and AI are essentially a tool to enhance productivity at this stage. So we envision... We have traditional vision models which involve looking at, let's say, the book that you have in front of you here, and you want to make sure that the book has the correct dimensions, that it is an A5 book, and it has the lines on the page and it has the binder. So we can inspect that with a camera, take an image, and we can analyze, yes, all those lines are present. We can measure the page, it's the correct measurements. Can we see a binder? Yes, we can. Great.
So can a human.
So can a human, absolutely. What a human would find much more difficult is if that was made of MDF and you had an extremely complex pattern where you're looking for defects in it, but the human eye is subject to fails in optical illusions. And what you see is only what's processed by your brain. So what you see is not what we see is not necessarily what we see. Hence, do you remember the famous dress?
Yes.
What color is the dress?
So it was golden white. It was totally golden white.
So what we see is not always what we see. Whereas with technology, we are certain that what we see is repeatable.
They see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, this is it, because we are one, and we train the model, I suppose. So we can put thousands of images through that model, and we can teach via deep learning, which is they're kind of synonymous, but they are not the same. Deep learning is where we take lots of data and we train a model what to look for. And so we can teach it to spot really advanced patterns that a human couldn't do. Mm-hmm. And that overcomes an obstacle that we had in traditional vision, where we're not just simply measuring a page. So now for companies that are in really advanced manufacturing, where the presence of bubbles, for example, in a vial, bubbles are not a foreign material, but they need to be able to guarantee that a bubble is a bubble and isn't a hair. We're talking in microns, so in less than a millimeter. Mm-hmm. So we can use AI and deep learning models to really quickly process those images and identify a bubble as a bubble, whereas a human might need a microscope. It could take a lot longer to do it. Human eyes are really sensitive to lighting changes. So we can remove a lot of that variability with technology. And then the human, I suppose, the focus changes to working with the technology. So we should work alongside it. It's not that we replace the humans. It's that we change how the workforce works, I suppose, in that those really, really repetitive tasks. So just taking AI out of it for a moment and just talking about robotics, China have over 90% of the new installations of robotics worldwide over the last 4 years, right? They are light years ahead of the rest of the world in terms of it. But what those robots are typically doing are really, really basic things, moving something mm-hmm. from one place to another, just over and over and over again. There's not many humans who want to do that or can do that for 8, 10, 12-hour shifts, just one part from one place and simply placing it in another over and over and over again. Whereas a robot will do it, you know?
50 years ago, humans did do it, and now they're not doing it, which means that there are less jobs for humans, which is, I suppose, where the concern is, because maybe somebody might not want to do that job, but if there is no other job out there, there is no option for them, they might have to do that job, and now they can't because there's robotics to do it.
It's a fair point. I suppose that comes to the ethics of engineering. So Engineers Ireland, for example, have a code of ethics which they write, and within that you have there's chapters on the development of AI and machine learning, the integration of technology with society, the impacts that it has on it. It is a complex question, and you are right, technically those really heavily labor-intensive jobs that are repetitive, they are or will be replaced in the very near future. But I don't think that that's necessarily a negative thing, because what we should be focusing on is the creation of opportunities for people to work in roles that are not that mundane and I suppose give them the opportunity to maybe work in things that are a bit more interesting, or I don't know if anyone
use
would really...
use part of our brains that computers
we're
don't
we're capable
have.
Of so much more. Yeah. So you're never going to have a robot that's, you know, creating music. Or,
oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, I'll never say never. I should never talk in absolutes.
I know I am being devil's advocate here, but I know that, you know, people might be listening saying, oh, for goodness sakes, like, you know, there was jobs pushing carts up hills back in Egyptian times, and then, you know, we got horsepower.
And then we got lifts.
Yeah.
No, quite right. everything moves on. Society always moves on. We're never advancing as fast as we were today. So tomorrow we will be advancing faster than we were yesterday. And that's the way that society and human evolution has happened.
And are you optimistic about the way it's going?
I have. Yes, I think I characterize myself as a really eternal optimist for humanity. I think we're capable of incredible things. The world is an incredible place. What we have achieved is incredible. My grandmother was almost 100 when she died. She lived through two world wars, and to see, I suppose, we talked in her later years about the technology that we have now. When she got her first mobile phone, and she didn't even have running hot water, you know, like the speed of development has been so exponential that we, as we sit here today listening, talking, we have no idea of what life will be like in 10 years time. It's almost impossible for us to perceive it because the rate of change is exponential, and so we don't know yet what can happen, and it will happen, but we just don't know what it is yet. So for me, that's incredibly exciting. It's mildly terrifying, slightly, if you really engage with it.
I think it's you've covered it all there. Yeah, I've covered it all. Thank you so much for talking to me. Sorry for getting into the philosophical conversation at the end of it there, as opposed to the business end of it. But tell us anyway if people would like to contact compar.ie.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can reach out to me at fkelly@compar.ie or to info@compar.ie. Go and look at our website, which is compar.ie, or the Swiss website, compar.ch. We'd always be delighted to talk about what we do, any of the topics we discussed today, anything that they may want to discuss. Yeah, we're always open.
Great. I'm going to go and meet some robots now, I think. Am I?
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Thank you so much.
It's the business.
The Hot Desk with Mary O'Neill on WLR.
Thanks to MK Brazel, Chartered Accountants and Tax Advisors.
You're very welcome back to The Hot Desk. It's Avian in for Mary O'Neill, and it might feel a little bit early to be talking about Christmas, although with this cold snap that we're having at the moment, it's probably not too early to talk about Christmas. But whether you like it or not, we're going to talk Christmas, guys, because I'm joined in studio by Trevor Darmody and Mary Merritt, who are both involved with the Winterval Festival, which you may not know, but work has been happening for that quite some time, for the last couple of weeks. Work is ongoing.
It's never too early to talk about Christmas.
It is.
Shame on you.
It can be too early to talk about Christmas. It can, but it's not. We're well into November now. So yeah, so Trevor, you're festival director. Mm-hmm. You have been for the last couple of years, but this year you are flying solo on your own. You're the main man.
That's
so
right.
Tell us all about the festival.
Yeah, the last 3 years, myself and John Grubb were co-directing it together, but this year I'm out on my own, yeah. So loads going on. There's tons of stuff in the festival. It keeps growing every year. The footprint of the festival has grown as well. So last year we were kind of based down in the cultural quarter, the retail spine, the Apple Market, Arundel Square, that kind of area. And this year now we're expanding out to the Viking Triangle as well. And there's about 60 events, 25 of them free. And there's loads of new stuff as well, really exciting stuff. We have Santa. We have to start with Santa. He's going to be in the underground caverns. They're 11th century caverns underneath the medieval museum. Spectacular. I was just in there today, actually. And the Winterval Illuminates is back where it belongs, some people would say, in Cathedral Square. So that's going to be shining on the Silver Museum. There's going to be some market there and some rides. Waterford Nice is back on the quay with the Waterford Eye. And then through George's Street, O'Connell Street, John Robert Square, Rundle Square, Michael Street, it's going to be market. Mary's going to tell you all about that in a minute. Down the Apple Market, we have a fun installation. It's Funhouse Mirrors, you know, where you get to see yourself sort of
deadly.
Skinny and tall and short and fat and all that kind of thing. Glow Gardens is back. That's a festival favourite. New stuff. We have a circus coming to town. We have a disco postbox. So Santa's giant postbox has been retrofitted with lights and smoke. And you can get a bop there every half hour for children. There's going to be a drone show this Saturday. Well, of course, yeah. Goes without saying. I was bopping against it last night. Snowball fighting down in Bailey's New Street. We've two pantos
Hold
in.
Hold on, rewind. Real snowballs?
Ah, no. That's too cold on the hands.
I never know. Might get real snowballs if the weather goes as predicted this weekend.
So it's like fake snow?
Yeah, exactly.
Fake snowball fighting.
Fake snowball fighting.
That's brilliant.
We have an inflatable giant snowball that you go into. It's 10 metres inside in the thing.
And
music is blaring. There'll be a snowman in there and a big ice thrown, and you just kind of letter.
You must have such great fun coming up with all these ideas.
Well, take out all your winter weather pressure.
Yeah. You're in there for us, me and you.
At each other.
No, by the end of the festival now, you'll all be in there belting each other.
It's bizarre because you do an awful lot of your planning in the summer.
Yeah.
So I'd be sitting out in the garden in the shorts, you know, ordering snowballs and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. So it is, it's fun.
Do you just let your imagination run wild? Like,
well, you can, but you can't go too wild either because the council give out to you. But there's things like insurance and stuff that you have to, you know, budgets. Keep in mind. Yeah, budgets.
Nasty things like budgets.
Gosh.
So no, you can't go too wild, but, you know, within reason, and every year we try and push the boundaries a little bit more, you know, grow it and make it even more twinkly and exciting and fun. Yeah. And
brilliant. Now, look, it sounds very twinkly and exciting, but I suppose this being the business programme, what we're here to really discuss is the business impact that the festival does have on the city. Mm. And there is no doubt it is the biggest Christmas festival in the country, really. So
it is.
And I was up in, where was I recently? And in Malahide, I think it was. And they're doing this big thing now in Malahide Castle. And I was like, oh, yeah, people are cottoning on to this now that there is money in Christmas. Yeah. And there is.
Well, there is. It started in Waterford 13 years ago. This is our 13th year. We were the first. And since then, there's been a lot of other towns and cities are doing it and have tried it. But if I do say so myself, I don't think anyone's
reaching our...
No, not the scale we're at. Yeah. You know, so they might have a market or they might have bits and bobs, but, you know, they wouldn't have 60 events going on kind of thing, you know. 60, so it's pretty massive. Incredible. And like the footfall would have been, up until a few years ago, was in around, like, say, if you go back, say, 10 years ago, it would have been around 500,000, 500,000 were coming through over the 5-6 weeks of it. Then that grew maybe about 3 years ago. That was up at about 600,000-650,000. And then last year, it skyrocketed to 1.8 million.
Wow.
Those are real figures.
1.8 million.
Yeah, across 6 weeks. Yeah, yeah. That's 300,000 a day or something like that. The windfall, I guess, for the city then would be, we did a calculation the year before last, and that was coming in at 14 million. And how we make that calculation is you multiply the number of people who came, and there's a, I think Fáilte Ireland have a multiplier. So for every person, the average spend, say, is €13.50 or whatever. So you multiply that by the number of people that are at the festival, and that's where you end up with your 14 million.
So what is the budget, or can you tell us?
Well, the council, they put in... Is it 2.75?
Okay.
But then the rest we have to raise ourselves. So the sponsorship, and depending on the year, that could be anywhere between 80,000 and 100,000 euros. And by the way, the door is always open to any sponsor who would like to have their brand front and centre at a major flagship national festival. There's all the concessions from the likes of your ice rinks, the market, other, you know, operators that come in that trade at the festival. Mm. So we kind of take it in that way. Some of the attractions we operate ourselves, so we take the income from that, you know. But all in, you're up around 750,000. So what it takes to put it on. Yeah.
Not bad for a little Christmas bonus.
But it's a lot of bang for buck for that, you know. And it's not just the weekend, you know. When you compare to other festivals, like other festivals might compare their budget to ours and go, ours is way bigger. But they're maybe 2 days or one weekend, whereas we're 6 weeks, you know. So when you divide it all out, actually, it's not much per weekend. Do you know what I mean?
One of the biggest money makers, I suppose, for you would be the market, would it be?
And
so what kind of money would that bring in?
We were just over the 100,000 last year.
Yeah.
I think we're about 105,000.
Yeah, there's costs in that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so absolutely.
It'd be about 55.
It's not free money.
Yeah, it was 60 grand
no
of that.
Such thing, Mary,
we'd be
no
going
such
out
thing.
On hiring cabins and
building cabins.
And building cabins as well, yeah, and transport and lighting and
electricity generators,
all that. Yeah.
Okay, so Mary, you are market manager.
I am.
So you're responsible for that 100,000 euro coming into the city. So can you tell us what bang we're getting for that book?
Well, we have O'Connell Street, George's Street. We've increased the number of stalls this year in Arundel Square, and we've moved into Michael Street as well. So all told, we have, over the course of the 5 weeks, we would have in a region of about 54, 55 traders. So they're all obviously paying to be there. We're hoping to increase that this year a little bit more, get a few more bobs in there. Food vendors, coffee vendors, hot chocolate, craft stalls, retail stalls, you know, they're all in there and they're doing their thing. You know, they're also, you know, a lot of them are local, which is great. A lot of them are not local, but they in turn are still bringing money into the city because they're hiring people locally. They are staying locally, they're eating locally. So, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm.
So local people who would have stalls, would they generally be people who would trade traditionally in markets, or would they be people who have actual stores?
There would be a combination of both. Okay. You would have the likes of, say, Dinky Donuts, Rom's Crepes, who would people in the city would know because they're in Waterford every single weekend. Piper's Churros from Tremor. There would be a local business, Photo Angel, which is Jerry O'Carroll's photograph studios. You know, they would all be known in the city, but they would be trading at Winterval. A lot of them would be regular market traders, but then you would also have a combination of smaller businesses then as well that would. Ideally, a lot of people use it as a testing point for a product. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nice, easy way to get your foot in the market. So we have a nice lady who calls herself Oh My Cookies. I don't think I need to explain what they are. The Olive Cafe are trading with us this year as well. Lismore Candles are coming down. So again, these would all be like very small producers that would not be in a position at this stage to have like a retail outlet. Mm-hmm. This is an ideal opportunity for them.
Yeah.
But then you would also then have the larger traders coming from outside of the local area. Mm-hmm. Who would be, you know, bigger traders.
Now, you said you're expanding the number of stalls this year. Mm-hmm. So we've obviously got new stalls haven't been here before.
We do. We have our firm favourites, but we have some new additions. We have a company called Real Image who will print your images for you in 15 minutes on canvas, on slate. We have a very nice gentleman called Joey Woodcrafts. Again, no explanation needed. We have a company coming down from Northern Ireland, Spirin's Clothing Company. Hmm. They do kind of country clothing and stuff like that, so they'll be quite nice. Gina Kinsella is relatively local. She's from the region again. She does like embroidery and crochet and stuff like that. So Native Handcrafts would be another one. Mm-hmm. They're like a Peruvian based.
Oh, yeah. All the colours.
All the colours and the rugs and the llamas and the whole nine yards. So, yeah. So we have some new and interesting ones this year. And like a lot of the cabins change week by week. So just because you've seen it once, as I always say, just because you've seen it once doesn't mean you've seen it all.
Yeah.
You know.
Okay, so if people want to find out about Winterval, obviously, rock up to the city for the 6 weeks leading up to Christmas. But a website, obviously, winterval.ie.
Yeah, and do check it out because there's a lot of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily see just by walking through the street. So if you walk in kind of not having looked at the programme, tons of stuff, you know, in shopping centres. For instance, there's gingerbread making in George's Court. That's a lovely event. Down on O'Connell Street then, there's WCQ Place, used to be the old Roxy. There's more workshops going on there for children. There's wreath making. There's conscious crafting. There's some stuff for adults, actually. There's a Draw Your Own Hero. It's like this, we've done this movie. It's a 4-minute short for children, animated short. And you go in and you draw the hero. And we scan it in and then re-render the movie. And so the hero that you drew then is the hero.
You know, I'll
the
draw stuff. You, Trevor.
Yeah.
I'm already in it.
and come here. So a lot of the events would be ticketed events as well? So would
yeah,
they are?
So if there's 60 events, actually I never counted how many ticketed ones. I think there's about 20 ticketed.
Okay.
And then there's loads free.
You know, okay, so. But again, website, Winterval.
Yeah, and there's lots of stuff like the you know, the stuff you don't need any tickets for, even though they're free, like the light show or the drone show or parades that we're doing, you know.
And when did you say Santa's arriving himself, the big man?
Well, he's coming on Friday officially, but he was here during the summer, did you know that?
Was he on his holidays, was he?
Well, he wasn't on his holidays. No, he was down checking on us.
Oh, I see.
He was checking to see was there a landing spot for his sleigh.
Ah,
okay. On the new BAM site there.
But he did it on
the clock tower. Yeah, and he came in and he was measuring up the grotto and all that there.
But Friday he's officially arriving.
Yeah, 6 o'clock. We'll be turning on the lights.
Yeah, time to get excited about Christmas, lads, whether you like it or not.
Indeed.
Okay, brilliant. That is Trevor Darmody, Festival Director for Winterval and Mary Merritt, Market Manager. Best of luck and happy Christmas, guys.
Thank you very much, Avian, and happy Christmas to you.
Ho, ho.